funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
There once was a kid we'll call Garrett, and Garrett was obsessed with music. Before he was even 7 years old, and before he had ever had a formal lesson, he taught himself to play guitar so well he was featured on a jazz album, TV talk shows, and music festivals where he brought the house down before thousands of spectators. By coincidence, a researcher into child prodigy noted that Garrett had a first cousin with autism. Or maybe it was more than a coincidence. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. That researcher was my guest, Joanne Ruthsatz. She's assistant professor of psychology at Ohio State University. And over the course of nearly two decades, having worked closely with more than 30 child prodigies, she has noticed a pattern. Many of them are not autistic themselves, but have a close relative who is. Could there be some connection between autism and child genius? The new book written by Joanne Ruthsatz with co-author Kimberly Stevens is called The Prodigy's Cousin, The Family Link Between Autism and Extraordinary Talent. Hi, Joanne. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. It's nice that we can speak to one another. All right. Will you give us a definition of who actually counts as a prodigy?
Well, to be considered a prodigy, you have to have reached an adult level of professional attainment before the years of adolescence.
Wow. So they're relatively uncommon in the general population.
Yeah, I would say between 1 in 5 million and 1 in 10 million.
So when prodigies are not doing their thing, the thing in which they have, you know, adult-level mastery before adolescence, could most people tell the difference between them and other kids, you know, on the playground or something?
Well, it presents a problem for the math and the science prodigies because they want to talk about black holes and the fourth dimension, and other kids in kindergarten really don't want to talk about that. For the musicians, you know, they all have this rage to master, so they want to play musical instruments, and for the artists, they want to draw. And so socially, it can be somewhat awkward for them, although their parents try and make up for that by supplying playtime, insisting on playtime for their children.
Do we know anything about how prodigies choose the thing to focus their attention on? Could someone who becomes a math prodigy be a music prodigy or a prodigy in some other subject, or is it sort of predetermined that they will be good at math?
One study I did looked at the cognitive differences between domains for prodigies, and the math prodigies have the highest full-scale IQ, plus they have incredible visual spatial memories. The musicians, although they all have exceptional working memories, had the highest working memories, and the art prodigies surprisingly had a deficit in visual spatial skills, which Milbreath would say is because they see the world differently. And that deficit, which at first I was devastated to get, I thought, oh, they're going to just rock this out, came up each and every time. And I realized that they see the world two-dimensionally. They're looking at details. They're looking at shadows and surface features. And it's easier for them to put it on a two-dimensional canvas since that's the way they're looking at the world.
Well, that's really a remarkable thing to discover. So you met the boy that we called Garrett, and we talked about him in the intro, and then you met his cousin with autism. That could have just been a fluke, but you started to recognize a pattern over time.
It could have been a fluke, except that prodigies are so rare, and that the coincidence of meeting his cousin, we weren't planning on meeting his cousin, they just happened to come in the same restaurant we're in at the same time, kind of gave me an epiphany moment.
So to be clear, the prodigies that you write about here do not have autism. Their social interactions, their communication skills are typical, if not better than average. What do they have in common with their relatives on the autism spectrum?
Well, they have an incredible working memory. They have attention to detail, and they have this rage to master whichever skill it is that they're interested in. They also had a DNA hit with chromosome 1 where they're sharing a genetic mutation with their autistic relatives but not with their neurotypical relatives.
Can you help us understand what working memory is for?
Well, working memory, I like to say for the prodigies, I believe they're processing it in their cerebellum where you would and I would learn to ride a bicycle, and that's why you never forget. Mm-hmm. I think instead of holding their memories in their cortex like the rest of us do. They're holding their working memories for their specific skill in their cerebellum where the memories never fade.
So you mentioned that they had one genetic change in common. What do we know about the possibility of a genetic cause for autism and whether falling on the spectrum might be about a single gene or multiple ones acting together or something in the environment?
Well, they say if you meet one autistic child, you've met one autistic child. I think it's as heterogeneous as you can possibly be. And I think that the prodigies in my sample are probably skewed towards the more functioning type because, well, I shouldn't say that because some of them were profoundly autistic because they have this prodigy genetic deal going on in their families too.
So in families, there are – in families that have prodigies and people on the autism spectrum, are there other relatives who are neither of those things, but they share some particular cognitive and behavioral traits?
Yes, there's neurotypical family members that are just average kids growing up and average parents. There's some that look a little bit like their prodigy child. There's some that don't look like that at all.
Is it possible that prodigy is the result of some kind of mutation? We don't like to think of it this way. We like to think of it as a gift, and therefore it doesn't mean something went wrong, but maybe something went wrong.
Oh, that's exactly how I think about it. Mm-hmm. I think about it as a happy mutation. I think that there is a deletion or a de novo mutation that actually holds back the deficits and the challenges of autism with pulling out the strengths that are associated with autism, such as attention to detail and good memories, that allows them to be progenitous instead of autistic.
How common is it to have more than one prodigy within a family? Is that like winning the Powerball?
Yeah, it's very uncommon, but I do have two sets with more than one prodigy in the family.
You write about a pair of brothers in the book who were diagnosed with autism early in life and then seemed to grow out of that diagnosis, which their mom is aware is a controversial statement to make. Will you tell us about them and why you felt their story belonged in this book?
Well, the little guy started tracing letters at the age of 4 months with his finger, and he had a passion for books and has an incredible memory. And his older brother, who also got an autistic diagnosis, has a way with Legos. He could, when there's a Lego add up, I always wonder if he made it. He has wonderful visual spatial skills.
And what changed for them as they got older?
I believe that this mutation, you know, your genes aren't active all the time, became more active, and they also went through extensive therapy.
So in keeping with looking at autism as a brain difference rather than a disability to be cured, there's an interesting line of research suggesting that an autistic brain isn't less of anything than a neurotypical brain, but more. Will you talk about that?
Well, they do have more neurons than typical brains do, and it's a lack of pruning. And so they are, I think, super sensitive, not insensitive, to the human experience, which makes them want to shut out as much stimuli as they can because it's overwhelming to them. And that's a new thought that people are starting to have, that it's not that they're insensitive, it's that they're super sensitive.
So what do you do in, you know, in recognizing that? What kinds of accommodations work to make things a little more comfortable for people with autism?
Well, there's the earphones. There's slowly integrating them into groups. There's ABA treatment. There's also training the talent, which Temple Grandin has advocated for, where you are looking at the talent that's associated with their autism, if there is one, and letting them work on that nonstop to bring along their social skills, because they'll want to talk about it, and their verbal skills as a secondary accommodation.
That's really interesting. So you, instead of saying, stop focusing on this thing that really obsesses you, you give them the space to really explore that and then, you know, hope that it will draw them in.
Exactly.
Or draw them out, I should say. Okay. I noticed anecdotally that a number of prodigies in this book that you profile were born prematurely, and preterm birth is a known risk factor for autism. So what do we make of that connection?
Not only that, if you had their birth dates, you would notice that they were mostly born in the spring of the year, the same time that children with autism are born. And I would have never realized that, but I was putting in the data and I just included their birthdays. And it was like May 7th, May 25th, April 1st. I was like, oh my goodness, isn't that a coincidence? And I believe that it's part of their condition that they are born prematurely.
We are speaking this hour with Joanne Ruthsatz, assistant professor of psychology at The Ohio State University and author of the new book, The Prodigy's Cousin, The Family Link Between Autism and Extraordinary Talent. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, we would welcome your calls at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Joanne Ruthsatz, who's assistant professor of psychology at Ohio State and author of The Prodigy's Cousin, The Family Link Between Autism and Extraordinary Talent. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. Joanne, is there any way to know whether autism or prodigy might be a result of preterm labor or a cause of it?
I believe it's more of a cause of the preterm labor than the result of it.
And what causes you to think that way?
Because research has shown that we used to think that prematurity was one of the reasons children had the autism, and now the research has shown that actually, the child is causing the preterm delivery.
So there's something different about the biochemical makeup of that child, something like that. Okay. You have a fascinating story in the book of a boy named Zach who was developing typically throughout his childhood until he suffered the serious head injury at age 13. How did that accident change his life?
Actually, he was in the basement of his church. And they were jumping over cardboard boxes, and he decided to do it head first and banged his head against the wall. And when he woke up from his concussion, he was different. He had a more serious attitude. He was quieter. His parents thought, well, good, maybe this taught him not to be so rambunctious. But 2 weeks later, his godmother brought him a guitar, and he would not put it down. He was obsessed with mastering the guitar and has been featured on Guitar World twice since that time. And he's only, I think he's 17 now. And his brother is an art prodigy and was born with major complications and very similar to the Jacob Barnett story.
It has to be challenging for parents to manage the life of a child prodigy. How much do you sort of clear the path for that child to work on the thing that really obsesses them? And how much do you try to sort of pull them into, you know, the world that everybody else is inhabiting?
Well, they try and do both. They try and give them the space to work on their projects, but they also want them to go outside and play. Mm-hmm. And so it creates a controversy about how much time they're allowed to do their craft and how much time that they have to spend outside doing a kickball game that they're really not interested in. So, but the parents are pretty much in sync with thinking that there has to be some playtime too.
You posed a question to yourself in your research, and that was, can a parent set out to grow a prodigy? And what did you discover?
No, prodigies come the way they are. There's no way that you could actually be a stage parent and push your child to the point of the obsession they have with their particular craft and the skill they have so early on. I mean, to be tracing letters at 4 months old, you can't teach a child to do that.
That's actually, I would think it's comforting to parents who are worried that they're not raising the next, you know, Tiger Woods or the next, you know, cello genius or something. Some of that may just have to come from the child.
Exactly. It's from within.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Scott in Dallas. Hi, Scott.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Well, I had a question about a comment that was made earlier about the working memory. I just wanted to know if the amazing working memories that children with autism have, does that somehow get in the way of them being able to adapt and form new memories?
It doesn't seem to in the prodigies. They said Jacob Barnett, who had an autistic diagnosis when he was 2, said that every math problem he's ever heard is stored and is ready for retrieval at any time.
Wow. What's remarkable about that is you have to wonder if that doesn't make it difficult to remember other things if you have that kind of working memory for one subject.
Well, he does say, if you want to know where the keys to the house are, don't ask me.
Of course, he's not alone in that, right? 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have Becky on the line now in Dallas. Hi, Becky.
Hi. I have a question. I actually am a child with Asperger's syndrome. I'm 23 years old now. And my parents didn't really know how to raise me. So instead of treating me like an autistic child, they raised me more like a neurotypical child with my siblings. Was that a smart decision, or should they have tried to nurture more of those gifts and that autism side of me?
Well, there's two ways of thought here. There are parents who go with the ABA program and have success and feel like that's the treatment of choice. And then there's people like Temple Grandin who are saying, just train the talents and the rest of it will come along with it.
We have an email here from Joey in Denton who wants to know about demographics. Do prodigies seem to come from more affluent backgrounds, or are there just as many within low-income communities?
There are just as many within low-income communities. As a matter of fact, there was a girl, I believe, she was in Latin America, and they were offering a free lunch if you came in and took a chess lesson. Mm-hmm. She went in for the free lunch and took the chess lesson, and now she's on the women's tour. And
wow.
So, prodigies come, all of my prodigies come from multiple backgrounds.
Is it hard to convince parents to work with you, to talk with you, to let you meet with their children? I would imagine many people with these prodigies, on the one hand, want them to be recognized for what they're doing, and on the other hand, want to really protect them.
In the beginning, it was very difficult. The first child prodigy took about 6 months before they decided I could come down to the South and work with him. But then I got a second prodigy whose mother promoted my work with other prodigies they knew. And then I was on 60 Minutes and it just exploded after that.
How often, forgive me for asking this, but how often do parents really think they have a prodigy and they've just got a bright kid on their hands?
Before I go, I Google the child to make sure that it's really a prodigy and that their work is at that standard.
Hmm.
It doesn't happen often. People know the difference between my child's a prodigy and I have a gifted child.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go on the phone now to Beth in McKinney. Hello, Beth.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, so I was wondering if there are any inexpensive resources that we as parents that can't really afford a $1,000 consultation can go to see if our child qualifies for any autism spectrum.
You should be able to go to your mental health department.
All right, and there's testing, you mean like with state and local health agencies,
yes.
That sort of thing? Okay, so Beth, you might check that out. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org. Joanne, we have great respect for success in this country. Many of us might wish that our children were prodigies. Is it possible to generalize about whether they tend to be any more or less happy than everybody else, or are they just as likely to be happy or unhappy?
They seem to be content when they're doing their skill set. Some prodigies report, you know, being socially isolated because there's very few kindergartners, as I said, that want to talk about black holes or the fourth dimension. But they seem to be content with their place in this world.
And are they able to you have some children who finished school at just a remarkably early age, and then they're sort of in a holding pattern for a while.
Some of them are, but some of them went right on to college and then on to PhD programs. I have Jacob, who finished college somewhere around, I don't know, was he 13 or 14, and went on to Perimeter Institute to get a PhD in theoretical physics. And he's up there now doing that, and he's, I think, just turned 16.
Wow. Are young prodigies good at communicating with adults about what they're doing? I mean, some of it might feel like it comes so easily to them that they would have to develop the skills to communicate with people who don't have these gifts.
Well, they're usually more advanced than their adult counterparts. I'll give you an example. Jacob was trying to explain the fourth dimension to me, and my daughter, who co-wrote the book with me, went to Princeton and then on to Harvard Law School. And I said, you know what, why don't you go down there and tell them your story about the fourth dimension? And I thought, well, they'll dummy it down. When we get home, they'll explain it to me and I'll get it. And so we get home and I said, well, did you get the fourth dimension? They said, not a clue.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. Let's go to Frank in Duncanville. Hi, Frank.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Question is this. What's the oldest prodigy you've ever developed?
The oldest one I've ever assessed was 34.
What's the oldest someone has come to you?
34.
34. And were they still, you know, did they have this rapid period of growth in childhood that leveled off, or at 34 were they still kind of, you know, amazingly gaining ability?
Yeah, this particular one started in music. He was the lead guitarist in a band that went platinum when he was 17 and then decided to switch to art. And now his artwork is hanging in major galleries all over the world.
That's really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Do prodigies, I mean, I would imagine because they're so rare, they don't have a chance to meet a lot of other prodigies.
No, but we've developed a web page that's a closed circuit so they can talk about things they want to talk about with each other.
Have you discovered anything interesting that they really want to communicate with another prodigy about that hadn't occurred to you?
That they're normal kids. They want to talk about the best cheeseburger they've ever had, who they like to listen to on the radio. You know, it's just a chance for them to get to talk about everything under the sun.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak now with Daniel in Dallas. Hi, Daniel.
Hi. My question is about the development of these skills. Does it seem like they're predetermined, or is it something that is experienced and then, I guess, grown into a better skill?
I wouldn't say predetermined as much as predisposed.
And, I'm sorry, please go ahead.
So their skill sets, I think, are neurologically set. And once they're exposed to the appropriate apparatus to perform, or they find pots and pans to play music on, then they just go to town.
We have an email here from Patricia who wants to know, are there organizations that link up child prodigies, it sounds like yours might do that, and allow them to meet and share their experiences? Is there a way that people could get into your closed loop if they have a prodigy?
Usually we'll reach out to them, but if there's somebody can look me up on email easy enough, and if they have a child who's a prodigy who wants to be on the forum, we've certainly included them.
So what can we learn about the nature of autism, which may be related, by studying children who don't have autism but share some of those qualities and develop into prodigies?
Well, my hope is we will find the mutation or the happy mutation that is holding back the deficits of autism while allowing the talents to shine through. If we find that, we'll have a better understanding of autism, which should lead to better treatments, because there is no medicine at this point for autism. There's only medicine for hyperactivity and other, you know, tic traits that don't really have to do with language deficits or social skills.
What's the row that is hoed by neurotypical siblings who have a prodigy sibling? You know, we think about, you know, there are challenges if you have a sibling with a disability or a serious chronic illness. It's got to also be challenging when someone in the family appears to be a superstar.
Exactly. When Zach was just passing out Josh's artwork cards, he felt a little bit in the shadow. But once he developed his own skill, they've really become best buds. So it is hard.
And do
when
parents
you have a child?
Yeah. Do parents want your help or the help of other professionals with sort of figuring out how to navigate that?
No one's ever asked me how to navigate that particular problem, but you can see it when a child is in the shadow of a superstar.
All right. Our phone number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. We have Kelly on the line now in Fort Worth. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. I just watched a fascinating documentary on Bobby Fischer, who is the champion but yet very reclusive chess player. And in this documentary, when he was going through the world championship against this Russian foe, he insisted on a lot of parameters, very, very specific parameters, before he would agree to the competition. And things like the cameras had to be at a certain place. There couldn't be any other noise factors. The chairs had to be positioned properly. And at the time, people thought that he was essentially trying to sandbag the competition or throw off the competitor. But others who knew him, it was more consistent with how he was. And I was curious, one, if you think he probably fell on the autism spectrum because he was considered a genius in the game of chess. And if indeed that, you know, conditions have to be right in order for that individual to perform their talent and most effectively.
Well, certainly autism, one of the key traits is insistence on sameness. So it would make sense that if he was on the spectrum that he would want things in an exact order so he could concentrate and not be distracted by things being out of place.
What do you learn about autism or prodigy? And I know prodigy is a much smaller population, but by looking at twins, fraternal or identical twins?
Well, there's been no twin studies. I only have one set of twins, and they're fraternal, who are prodigies, and it's a boy and a girl, so you can't use them in any studies. In autism, the Fulstein and Rutter paper in 1977 showed that monozygotic twins, if one had autism, the other one was likely to have autism. But in fraternal twins, where they're not identical, none of the twins had autism if one of them did. So we learned that autism was a highly genetic disorder.
We're speaking this hour with Joanne Ruthsatz. She's assistant professor of psychology at The Ohio State University and co-author, along with Kimberly Stevens, of a new book called The Prodigy's Cousin, The Family Link Between Autism and Extraordinary Talent. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Ohio State University Assistant Professor of Psychology Joanne Ruthsatz. Her new book is called The Prodigy's Cousin, The Family Link Between Autism and Extraordinary Talent. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. Joanne, you discovered that the male-to-female ratio of prodigies is really close to the male-to-female ratio of people diagnosed with autism.
Yes, in my small sample, it's 3.5 to 1, where autism is 4 to 1.
And what does that tell you about the possibility of a connection? It doesn't prove anything, but it certainly suggests something.
It's just more evidence to support.
All right, 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Marion in Dallas. Hi, Marion.
Hi. I was wondering, is there a record of two prodigies marrying, and were the offspring more likely to be prodigies?
That's an interesting question. I have no idea if two prodigies have ever married. Not in my sample, and they're all pretty young still. And would they have a chance of having a progenitor offspring? I would imagine that they have more of a chance than the normal population.
How old are these children? What do they tell you about when they first understood that they were different in a special way?
I don't know that they thought that they were different in a special way. I think that that kind of attention that they got just blossoms one day. Jacob Barnett tells a story. One day he was just an 8-year-old going to college classes, and the next day he was all over the press. Hmm. And I think at that point, he realized and his parents realized that there was something very special about him.
Does childhood prodigy usually translate to superior performance in adulthood? Like, what happens when by 25 or 30, other talented people with more normal courses of development have caught up to the prodigies?
Well, I've only been doing it for 18 years, and so far they've all stayed on track and are becoming, you know, better and better with their skill sets. So I don't know what the future brings. Other people will have to follow the cohort and see.
All right, back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. This time we have John on the line in Dallas. Hi, John.
Hi. I have a question.
Okay.
So how likely is it that a child prodigy goes undiscovered, like they never get the chance to perform their skill?
In the Western world, it's pretty unlikely because we have schools that will identify and art, music, math, those are all going to stand out quite readily on standardized tests and by observing the child at musical play or during their art class. So it's unlikely in our Western world. Now, in poorer countries, there was a boy from Malaysia, I believe, who actually went around collecting garbage and hooked up a radio station in his little hometown, which had no connectors. And they had him at MIT for a while. So even in third world countries, there is some recognition of this unbelievable talent.
Do you ever think about people who might have lived centuries ago that had, you know, these kind of, if they are mutations that cause prodigy, that really just existed? You know, maybe the best mind ever to program a computer was born in 1548.
Well, that's certainly possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, centuries ago, women wouldn't have been allowed to be prodigies, although Clara Schumann was a prodigy. Her father only allowed her to practice 2 hours a day. And he was very concerned about her not having a normal life. But she went on to compose and play well into her 70s.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. Are the prodigies that you've worked with thinking about, you know, whether the world will feel different when they have outgrown, like, Wunderkind status?
It does feel different from them, for them. There's a transitional stage. One of the artists that was in high school when she did a tribute, Lorne Voyers, to John Lennon, had a period of time where transitioning into an adult artist was more competitive. And so, you know, not being 13 when you did it, but being 22 is quite different.
Is there a reason why prodigy, I mean, we've talked about visual arts and music and mathematics and science. You don't so often hear about, like, literature prodigies. What do you think is the reason for that?
Well, literature prodigies are probably more left-brained. And also, people who win the Nobel Prize in mathematics do it usually in their 20s. If you're going to win a Pulitzer Prize, you usually do it in your 50s. There's not enough life experience yet to write about. And so it leaves them at a disadvantage.
That's interesting. So you would have to have some life under your belt even if you were born to be a brilliant writer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back to the phones. We have Doug on the line in Dallas. Hi, Doug.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
My wife and I have been mentoring a young composer who is on the Asperger's spectrum, and he's brilliant musically and won a national competition this last year as a high school senior. We have him enrolled in a junior college. We're trying to figure out the best path forward for him in terms of him being able to take his talent and carve out a living for himself, given the issues that he has socially. So I missed the first part of the program, but perhaps you can tell me if there are some agencies or some help that we can get in trying to figure this out.
Can he live independently?
He does not yet, but I think that, yes, he will be able to eventually.
Then I would get him into a musical institute where he'd have the most chance of making like-kind friendships and a place to work after his skill set is developed.
All right. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email us at think@kera.org. Let's speak now to Sanjeev in Dallas. Hi, Sanjeev.
Hi. Thanks, Chris, for taking the call. Sure. My question is the findings, and I'm sorry I didn't get the last name of the author, Joanne, but your findings, does it extend to kids with Asperger's? I have a son who has Asperger's, but on a mild side. And how do you see that? And he has a phenomenal memory. Like, he can recall things that were done 10 years ago and what we were wearing at an airport or something, you know. Very micro memory, long-term memory like that. Have you found that incidence in your research?
Yes. Yes, the prodigies all have exceptional memories, and I believe they're storing their memories in a different spot than we store ours. There's not been any MRIs on young prodigies. There's been two on adults that practiced to become prodigies, and one of them showed that it stored their information in their cerebellum where we would store our procedural memories, like how to ride a bicycle. And the other one showed that it stored their memory in the cortex where most people store long-term memories. And so we don't have enough information yet to know, but my guess is that the child prodigies and the individuals with autism who have exceptional working memories and Asperger's are storing their memories in their procedural cerebellum.
It's interesting that you found some prodigies who had, you know, family backgrounds and things, and they had been encouraged along the way, and some that just seemed to have, like, sprung out of nowhere.
Yep. It's very interesting. And parents differ on how much they support their child's effort. Lauren Voyers, when she did the artistic statue or tribute to John Lennon that's up in Liverpool now, took off for Arizona. She was a high school senior to paint the project by herself. Her parents were very proud of her and, you know, supplied her with art supplies, but they didn't travel with her.
How did you get into this field of study? I mean, you could have focused your career on a lot of different things. What made prodigies the thing that interested you?
I was never going to do that. I was actually being trained on the mental retardation grant. And I was working with a clinical case, and the little girl was 11, and she had no pain sensors. She was 44 pounds. She had no voice at all. She had no language. And a different researcher wrote a paper that said anybody could be exceptional if you'd start young and practice long enough, and it felt like insult to injury. And so I came up with a theory that said, no, to be exceptional, it's probably going to be at least three variables: general intelligence, domain-specific skills and practice time would be important. And while I was doing this, I was comparing the CIM, the Cleveland Institute of Music students, to self-selected high school students. My husband came home with a magazine with a cover of a child prodigy on it. And he said, if you're all so interested in exceptional performers, how about this kid on the cover? And I thought, you know, this is fascinating because if I'm right, his IQ will be off the charts and his music audiation will be off the charts because he hasn't had a formal lesson and really very limited time to practice. And so that's how it all started. I called them, and 6 months later I was in Louisiana testing the little boy. And he did have a gifted IQ, but not what I expected. I thought he'd be off the charts. What was off the charts was his working memory. And when his mother tells the story, I asked her, I said, so does he have an unusually good memory? And she said, it's so funny you should ask that because he was an only child. She said, we were going down for a Disney movie, and when we got there, they said, oh, we thought he'd be taller, but we have a part for him too. So take these home and memorize them. And when he's ready, come back and we'll do some footage on it. So she said, I took him out in the hall and I read the 12 to 14 pages to him, and I brought him back in, and they said, no, we want him to memorize them. And she said, I know. And they said, no, we don't want him to read them. She said, well, I know. And they said, okay, roll the tape. She said, and their jaws just dropped that he could memorize those 14 pages with one reading. And so that's how it all got started. And he was the one who I met, his autistic cousin.
Wow. Are prodigies susceptible to burnout? I mean, they have this passion for what they're doing. They have this great attention to detail. Are they more or less likely to have had it at some point?
Not in my cohort. Hmm. You know, there's been such limited research on prodigies because they're so difficult to pin down and to locate. I mean, I've traveled to England. I've traveled to Canada. I've been all over the United States just to get the small cohort I have. And so there hasn't been a lot of literature devoted to them. Is it the early ripe, early rot? Not that I'm seeing, and I've been doing it for 18 years, but time will tell.
All right. I think we have time quickly to take one more question from Tony in Fort Worth. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
My question is there a correlation between prodigies and savants?
Well, savants are individuals with daily living skill problems. So they have autism, most of them, about 75%, have autism, and they have a spiked skill. But they have this one skill that is like the prodigies who don't show the signs of autism or any daily living problems. And so they're very alike except for that one exception.
I've heard people say that it's hard to live with a genius, a great artist, no matter what the field and whether or not they were sort of prodigies as children because they have this focus on things. But that's different from having like a daily life skill sort of socialization challenge. Okay.
Yes.
What kind of ongoing research into prodigies who seem to be at high risk for autism but don't have it is on your radar screen right now? Like, what more could we learn about autism from prodigies moving forward?
Well, right now, the DNA is down to the last vials, and we are looking for the happy moderator gene that is holding back the autistic traits and allowing the talent to shine through. If we hit that, and we should know that in a couple months, then there'll be biological research about what protein is the, you know, this particular mutation altering, what can we do to duplicate that? How can we make better treatments for children with autism and possibly children with mental retardation because of that?
Do you imagine there would be parents who would want to genetically engineer a child to be a prodigy?
I hope not.
Yeah. Why not?
Well, because I think that God made each of us special. And if you don't have a child with a disability, I think, you know, until the medicine is 20 years old, we won't know the long-term effects. If you have, on the other hand, a child banging their head against the wall and biting themselves, you might want to take the risk.
Joanne Ruth Satz is Assistant Professor of Psychology at The Ohio State University. Her new book, written with co-author and your daughter, Kimberly Stevens, is called The Prodigy's Cousin, The Family Link Between Autism and Extraordinary Talent. Joanne, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy, with help on the phones today from Braylon Becton. And our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. The show's email address is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.